Today's episode is brought to you by Susan McMullen, professional speaker and small business coach. A nurse for 26 years, Susan uses her experience after making a successful career change to something she loves to coach others off the same cliff into the life they really want but can now only imagine. Contact Susan by sending an email to susan@thebetteryouproject.com. You can also listen to Susan's journey by visiting our archives at www.thebetteryounetwork.com.
Have you recently started a business, or are you thinking about doing so?
Wondering where to start? Looking for advice, or just want to share your story?
If you answered yes, the Better You Network wants to hear from you.
To be a guest on one of our shows, please contact us via Twitter at Better You Project or email us at thebetteryouproject@gmail.com.
Come join us and inspire others.
This offer only valid in the United States and Canada.
I want to scream and shout and let it all out and scream.
And welcome to the Footprints of Giving show. This is Quinitha Q. Frazier, your lively host, and I am grateful to be in the studio with a fellow female social entrepreneur, Monica Ponder. Monica is currently the CEO and president of MLP Communications. Now, MLP promotes positive changes in individuals and communities by designing health communication approaches based on science and consumer research. Now, they design compelling health and community-based campaigns to help organizations and individuals to engage those that are vital to their success. They, in fact, support organizations that are nonprofit, governmental entities, and corporations that have a socially minded mission or goal, which, in fact, makes her a social enterprise. We're going to talk to Monica here in a moment. Monica, thank you so much for joining us here in the studio. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Monica, just so that you all have some context, that she's not just a what I call one of our nonprofit tree huggers. Monica is a MS and MSPH and is a health and scientific communications professional. Monica has worked in health communications for nearly 10 years and also leads several community initiatives under the arm of her consulting company. And now I will tell you that as a health scientist, she designs and implements health initiatives that predictably translates into business success. She's trained professionally as a chemist and is an expert in epidemics, which took me a long time to pronounce, by the way. She gave me some help going on. But just in to wrap up about Monica before we get to dig deeply into the heart of the matter here with her. She's worked as a health communicator with the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, and Prevention. And prior to joining the CDC, she worked as a public health liaison with the Fulton County Department of Health and Wellness as a lead clinician. Now, Monica, I've read your bio. I've looked you up. I understand the place where you found yourself, but please explain to me the journey or the path between being a lead chemist and scientist and now working in the area of communications. What led you to this path?
That's a great question. It's my favorite question, actually. I like to explain this, particularly when I talk to young people. But when I was in high school, I really wanted to pursue a career in communications.
Huh.
Except I was really good at mathematics and science, and my counselor and my mother advised me to actually pursue a career in the sciences. Hmm. And there was a great opportunity at Clark Atlanta University where I could get my bachelor's and master's in 5 years. I decided to pursue a chemistry career and put my communications dreams not on hold, but just as more of a hobby, a passion. But I've always liked healthcare, and I've always wanted to communicate about something meaningful. So I always had that drive. But you know, the purpose of college is that you really go to find yourself, mm-hmm. and I think it's a lot of pressure to really find that one fit. And so I was fortunate enough to work in a laboratory. We studied a disease related to lupus.
Huh.
Which actually is very prevalent in African American communities.
Right.
And even though I was a laboratorian, I would go out and present my research, and people would always ask about who's affected. How do you prevent the illness? How do you manage it? And a lot of personal stories. And that got me interested in public health. And the thing with chemistry is that you study one small facet of something. Public health, you look at the entire forest. And so from there, I went to Emory University and I pursued training in epidemiology. But even with that, it was just statistics. So now I was more versed on the numbers and why, for example, African-American women are highest at risk for heart attacks and strokes. And I could speak more on an expert level about that. But then what was missing was the stories and the context and the environment and the role of social dynamics on health. And that really is what led me to communications. The timing was great because the CDC was establishing a Center for Health Marketing. So even as an industry, it's a very new industry, and I was able to get on board with them at that time. And it's just been a great path because I've been able to merge and marry my scientific skills and my communication skills. And so really, I tell people I write about the science. I communicate the stories. I make the numbers matter. And just, I know we'll talk more about the company, but I feel like that is a gap and a need because people want to be able to communicate to both sides. You have to speak expertly about really what the problem is, but also it's that emotional side that really also drives and closes decisions and really gets people to the table in a genuine way.
And I appreciate that journey because I can see where you found a way to, well, you've been able to integrate your professional learning or your professional perspective and research with a personal passion for informing the general public around health-related issues. Did you find yourself as a child or as a teenager planning, as we think we're doing when we're children, planning our future, having a specific bend or burden for a specific population? So do you have a personal story or just some personal leading around a specific population that you mentioned?
Not really, which is why my focus is very general right now. You know, I just have a passion for people. I've always enjoyed people's stories. So I'm a little bit of an extroverted introvert. I enjoy meeting people, but I really try to find that connection with people. And I think everyone has a story and everyone has a reason why they see the world the way they do today. And that's something that has always followed me. One thing I always advise to young people is, you know, always pursue your passion. Right. And, you know, everything else will follow. And even with scientific careers, there's so much that you can do with an analytical mind that you can really explore the creative sides of industry with the analytical training. So it's really about exploration and really using your passions to really drive and direct. Passions married with your natural skills.
Absolutely.
To really drive and direct your paths.
Absolutely. And you mentioned before the company, we'll talk about the company. Do you do public speaking in specific community with community organizations? Tell me a little bit about your individual experience in the community.
Well, I've always been involved from a civic aspect, even when I was in college. That was a big part of it, particularly being a science major and having been in class all day in labs. I found an outlet and really be able to still connect with people and just really be a genuine person and enjoy stories and just enjoy people. That's the best way I can really describe it. So I've pretty much always volunteered or done some type of work. I think it began to take meaning on a non-professional side. So at post-college, when I would see problems and I would connect with people who want to do something good, may not have had the resources or tools or skills to be able to do it. And I just naturally want to help.
Right.
And I want to plug in. And then with this, the field emerging, I saw an opportunity to really fill a gap in more of an angel network type of way. And there's just so much in this side of doing good that is a critical competency. And there are people out there that are trained to help nonprofits and governments and companies who want to do social good to communicate their missions. And those are people who are called health communicators. And they are able to actually connect the dots and connect the science with the stories and to really make sure your interventions and story lines up to make sure that you are reaching your goals in the right way. So I formalized it to answer your question a few years ago and really started to do it more systematically under the umbrella of a company. But this is something I always did just on the side. So I guess if people ask my hobby, I would always be helping somebody or at a health fair.
Right.
I was like, well, that's not really a hobby. But that was really what I would do. And I enjoy doing it when I'm not working. And so it really began to make more sense in the last 7 to 8 years that I should really pursue this more formally.
I like that. And have you, in the course of formalizing your efforts as a thought leader, which I will refer to you as, any unexpected surprises, things that you've learned about yourself or the industry that you have grown in that you didn't know that you would find in along the way?
Well, there are a couple of things. I think that there are some huge problems affecting our population, and we need connectors. we have a lot of people in pockets with the right gifts doing the right things, but they're not really connected.
Absolutely.
So if you look at obesity, you have a lot of great nonprofits out there, a lot of companies who are doing very discreet tasks, but where's that system conversation? Mm-hmm. Are they talking to the policymakers? Are they talking to the healthcare providers? And so what I've realized even more, and I think the numbers that we see in our nation when it comes to health outcomes, mental health outcomes, crime, we see that there's obviously a disconnect. And I see an obvious place to plug in, and I see an obvious place to really link stories and to communicate the right message to the right person at the right time.
Good.
That is based in really real world problems. So it's still almost like a corporate methodology to it, but you're looking at social issues. So I'm an entrepreneur, but I care about social issues. So I think that has been the biggest driver in that there are just huge issues that our nation is facing that we really need people who are business-minded and focused to really commit the time and skills and training to address.
And where do you think, just in the way of that being your passion, where do you think the greatest gaps of information exist? I think I know the answer to this question, but in the way of health communications or...
Well, so I will have to break that down. I think, so I do a lot locally. And there's a lot of capacity locally that of people who connect with real people. And I'm going to use the example of high blood pressure. So high blood pressure, there's 67 million adults in the country with high blood pressure. And more than half of them do not have it under control. It's silent. It's so you don't realize that you're sick when you have it. You may be diagnosed at a health fair or not really connected. But there's so much that needs to be done. But if every time I have a family gathering, we have foods that are high in sodium. If I have never really been trained to do high blood pressure, to take my blood pressure every week and really report it to my doctor and build that relationship, there's a gap.
Right.
And so that's really on the local level that there are a lot of people who are kind of in mini crisis mode. And then when you have a problem like a heart attack, then it becomes an issue. And really, that's the conversation we should have had, you know, a while ago.
Right.
On the flip side, nationally, there are a lot of resources and tools. There are a lot of best practices and interventions that really have worked in other communities, and you have that purview that can go to that local nonprofit and say, these are the top three things you should be telling your client base or your constituents, or when you go out into the community, here are some tools that you can adopt. So I think making that connection with what is out there to solve the problem for people who are mom and pop nonprofits, or people who are individuals just trying to do good in their church or their local communities, or even in the healthcare system, the hospitals who are trying to care for the indigent underserved. I think it's about the connection and putting the right conversation, the right people in the room to have the right conversations, and connecting all stakeholders with the same resources and the same plan.
And who do you think, personally, who do you think should be responsible for that connection? In the way of connecting, you described, sometimes there's a lack of the connectors between the local, what I call grassroots community organizations, and some of the governmental or state-based agencies, or even some national resources. Who do you think is responsible for making those connections?
Well, there's the two parts. So first of all, that is the role of the activist, the advocate, to make sure that this issue is brought to the forefront and that everyone is aware. But it's also that collaborative effort of everyone in the system, from the individual to their doctor, to the community with building sidewalks and having adequate fresh fruits and vegetables, to policymakers, to school systems, to the governor, and it could just go on and on, where there has to be a personal investment of each stakeholder. And I believe it's the role of the activist and those who are leaders in those conversations to really corral and to keep people motivated and to make sure that messages are tailored to make everyone at the table care and be vested in an issue. So it's really a conversation, and it's communicating in the way that a person should be spoken to. So maybe I may not respond to a story, but I respond to numbers. Whereas other people, they need a story.
Right.
They need to see a face with an issue for them to really act or care or be compelled. Unfortunately, our country, we do act a lot out after tragedy.
Right.
And that sometimes has compelled people to act. So I believe you need strong advocates to say this is an issue and to get in front of the people who can make the difference and solve the problem. So.
And I'm interested, I'm curious to have a conversation about the types of funding that has followed your efforts, especially around connecting the dots from the local level and some national or even state-based resources, educational resources. I found that one of the greatest barriers to entry for advocates or activists or even communicators like you has been access to capital to be able to fund the dissemination of information. We'll be right back here in a moment with Monica Ponder to talk about her company, MLP Communications.
Juanita Frazier is an expert and trusted advisor on matters relating to building the financial vitality of charitable organizations. She's well known in the community of giving as the bridge between funding entities and nonprofit organizations. Her keynote topics and workshops are derived from knowledge gained during her 15-plus year career as both an entrepreneur and consultant and development officer for a variety of charitable organizations. She has facilitated over 250 workshops and seminars over the course of her career. Juanita is the perfect resource for keynote presentations, program development workshops, brainstorming, and conceptualizing for new social enterprises. Contact her today at www.theqbrand.com. Again, www.theqbrand.com. Listen to our interviews with Juanita in the archives at www.thebetteryounetwork.com.
And we're back with Monica Ponder from MLP Communications. And I've had an interesting introduction to Monica by way of the studio and learning that a scientist or a chemist can actually have a vibrant personality. I have a friend, and I did mention this earlier, I have a good friend who's a chemist, and she has struggled. We've been out of school now for almost 15 years. She's historically struggled with taking all of her brilliancy and being able to communicate it to regular people like me. She gets frustrated. I mean, I call her a lab rat, Monica. So to your credit, though you are a trained chemist and clinician, you have broken the mold on what a true chemist looks like. You all are not lab rats. Thank you. And I'll make sure she listens to this interview. I'll say, do you see? There are women out here who can go and speak to the public and train people and take their intelligence and their brilliance about their, and they can speak to people who have no idea what those scientific and health related terms mean. So thank you. But I do want to recap one thing that we began talking about before we went to break around funding, or who are the players in this space to help to fund the dissemination of information from what I call the top down, or in some cases, the bottom up, from the local community up, or in the way of needs, communicating needs, and then from the top down in the way of resource, educational resource. What has been your experience? Who are some players here? And have you seen where there could be better allocations of funds around your efforts?
Yeah, that's a great question. The bottom line is that it's issue focused. The funding is issue focused. So I come across a lot of organizations who have a great heart, they're doing a great service, but they're not framing the impact of what they do in terms of the larger context and benefit to society. So if you're speaking and working with youth, you're mentoring youth, you're giving them wellness education activities, you're also keeping them off the streets. You're motivating them, giving them options and hope, and that is also less opportunity for them to commit crimes and other things. And you have to frame your solution in terms of the problem, and that's where the funding is. And from there, you look at really the industries who have personal investments. Most corporations have a corporate giving side, Publix, Home Depot, even a lot of companies that you support every day, Walmart, everything. There's also federal and state grants that are, again, issue specific. And with federal dollars and government dollars, a lot of it is based on interventions and best practices and evidence-based approaches. So you have to understand also why you're doing what you're doing in the way that you're doing it and being able to articulate that. So a lot of it is also you also getting the attention. You know, people and numbers move policy. So if there's an issue that may be grassroots, you have to build that groundswell and momentum and media attraction to even get people interested. So there's several ways to attract funding. I can give you a couple of examples. I did work with a mommy blogger. She's been a mommy blogger for several brands like Crayola and Target. And she picked lactation rooms for working mothers as one of her issues. A lot of women, they stop breastfeeding very early because they have to go back to work, make a living, support their family. But unfortunately, a lot of these environments, a lot of public places have not committed to a private lactation room where these mothers can pump and go back to their job. So they stop breastfeeding. And so I worked with her. She actually had a lime green poster with bubble letters on Facebook and said, would you eat in the bathroom? Because that's what a lot of people, companies tell mothers to do, is pump in the restroom. And I reached out to her, and we actually, just to fast forward it, developed a campaign.
Wow.
Called Table for Two, because all you're asking for is a simple room with a table and a chair for two, either for a mother to breastfeed or a mother to pump. And we did a great creative photo shoot, which is health communications. You are bringing the issue to a visual standpoint. We had models go in a bathroom and actually be photographed eating food. I mean, it just, that's something that a man would understand. That's something that children would understand. And it makes the message bigger than your immediate stakeholder. And that drives the action. So we targeted Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. They don't have any lactation rooms, but they have about 12 smoking rooms. And so 2 years ago, we started the campaign targeted Hartsfield-Jackson. And last spring, they actually launched an RFP to actually build a family play center in one of their terminals.
Good for
you. So it's all about, again, that was more grassroots media and public engagement, social media engagement. You get attention. And from there, you can also leverage funding after some of your initial successes. So it's a comprehensive strategy. If grants aren't the option, maybe it is public support and community engagement and that grassroots strategy to really get more momentum for what you do.
I love that. I love that strategy, actually. And I think the impact will stream beyond Hartsfield-Jackson, because the fact that you all created images that will last in any individual's mind, I think will create a snowball effect in other public spaces. I love the strategy around that campaign. Now, Monica, it sounds as though you have been able to create the secret sauce for a lot of companies and individuals like the one you mentioned. Tell us about your business model for MLP and how you're able to help organizations and individuals.
You know, I don't know if it's a secret sauce as much as it is my unique skill set.
Mm-hmm, that's the sauce.
I'm putting it to work. So I am a scientist, but I love stories. And, you know, how do I make the connection? Because do I just stay in the right brain side of life or the left brain? And so for a few years, particularly right after college, I struggled with my professional identity. Should I just stay a chemist or epidemiologist? But I wasn't really being fulfilled. And I felt like we weren't really solving the problem, really understanding it down to the levels that we need to understand it. So MLP Communications, the long-term vision is for it to be an angel network. What I'd like to do is work directly with a corporate funder around issues and actually be that gift to nonprofits or governmental organizations or corporations who are trying to do something socially conscious at no cost to them.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but specifically health-related corporations, or?
It's health, civic, and social.
Okay.
Because it all ties in when you look at health disparities and the impact of environment, crime, transportation, all of these things on your behavior, all of that really translates into health outcomes.
Right, right.
And that's why health is really such a complicated conversation. But the problem is either there's not a value placed on communications by an organization to really put money into that effort, or you have a lot of organizations doing great work, but they're not visible. They don't have the budget and the money. So you have those two issues. Yeah. But you also have a lot of federal and corporate organizations who are not on the ground, but they want to put money and put dollars to make sure they move the needle in more of a collaborative umbrella capacity. So that's our business model. We also work with any organization that has a social, health, or civic related mission or goal and really help them with strategic planning, grant writing, communications product development, and you know, other services to help them really be empowered, to help them build a capacity and really expand their mission and really hopefully reach their goals, to make sure they're doing the right things, framing their problem and solution in the right way, which is key, and then communicating how they're framing it in the right way, which is where a lot of organizations get stuck.
Absolutely. And would I be out of line to refer to your firm as a public relations arm or communications team, for an interim communications team? I mean, how would I describe the core of your services?
I think the operative word is interim.
Okay.
So, of course, I can call the media and do all of that, but really it begins with a strategy. If you don't have anything significant to say, the media will not pay attention.
Right.
So sometimes the first step is not always going to a PR firm. You have to go to a strategist to really design your messages and communication materials and to make sure your story is aligned, particularly if you're in this area and scope of work.
Okay.
So that is more of a a key milestone down the road is PR.
Okay.
PR is how we actually engage and what we do to make sure we get attention. But before that, what are we saying to them?
Okay.
Who are our primary stakeholders? Who do we need to really advocate for the most to really get this needle moved, or to get them to write a check, or to get them to really support this effort or cover this project? And that is really the most important part of any organization's mission and effort, is that they should take the time to really make sure what they're doing is designed the right way. A lot of people want to jump to the $1 million grant. And you just started yesterday, and it's just
welcome
not that possible.
To my world. Yes.
There's a lot of competition. And also, just make sure you're doing the right things yeah. and you have the right numbers to really justify why someone should invest in you. And I think that should be a genuine conversation. That's the role that our organization plays.
Okay, so you all are not a nonprofit organization, and I'll lead in with that. You are, in fact, a social enterprise, a for-profit company whose products and services are tied to a social mission. I love it. I get it. Okay. Tell us about what the organizational structure looks like for your organization in the way that I understand you're the CEO, but do you work through other organizations to provide this? Are you building the capacity of organizations to then go out to the strategy for your customers? Or are you primarily using yourself and other individual consultants to deploy to these companies?
It just depends on the scope and the request of service.
Okay.
So for a lot of companies, we come in on the front end and do capacity building.
Okay.
And so I work with them to really develop the missions. Some of them actually need startup and actually getting their nonprofit paperwork done, developing their mission statement, making sure you have the right board members, making sure that your website conveys that you are a missions-oriented organization that does the right interventions with strong impact statements.
Right.
So even the look and feel of that. And also grant writing is a large portion of my portfolio, which of course I do myself for these organizations. And I think that is where part two of the conversation comes in at. Do you have the capacity in your organization to do it? And you either build that into your grant, or we do offer more product-specific, task-specific services like product development, evaluation, and all of and structuring it on a project-by-project basis. And so under MLP Communications, we do support a couple of nonprofit brands that we do work with. So there's a lot that I do, and I initiated on my own. For example, I mentioned the Table for Two.
Yeah.
So that is one of the organizations I do support. And I also have a blog that I do. Under that brand, we do a lot of health fairs and a lot of dissemination of health information. So I'm a social entrepreneur. This is a for-profit company, but then there's also so much of a need that we look for community partners to really solve, particularly a very clear and present health issues in the community. Mm-hmm. A lot of what I do centers around teens and adolescents,
okay,
sexual health and wellness, women and children's issues. So I try to live and breathe it in every sense of the word, but it just depends on the needs of the organization. So I would say we're a boutique interim communications firm, and we can come in and help you build the capacity that you need to really have long-term and sustainable success.
I like that. So communications and capacity building, which I know in the nonprofit world is essential to attracting any funding or raising any capital. And you said something in your first lead out that your firm communicates things that are meaningful. In our last couple of minutes here, I do want to sort of get on our soapbox around the effectiveness of a social enterprise, mm-hmm. and how oftentimes funders become disenfranchised by companies who are doing a social good and who are, as you said earlier, really moving the needle on issues that are relative to our local communities. What have you found in the way of feedback from the funding community in approaching the social issues that you approach as a for-profit business? Have you had any pushback? Have you not been able to gain the entry that you would have expected because you are a for-profit business versus walking in the door as a nonprofit?
Well, no, not particularly in my lane because of just the services I provide. So for simpler terms, I could say I'm a communications firm, but I'm not the one actually doing the work. So I help a lot of different nonprofits. So I always have a partner at the table that is a nonprofit or government or an organization. Really, I'm an advocate for them, really in the first stages of our relationship.
Okay.
Really, the biggest issue is how you talk about the issue that you want to serve. So the feedback I get from a lot of funders is you have to have a great story, and you have to show that the dollars that you're asking for matches the ROI. It's a business conversation. So even though someone is giving, a foundation is giving out a grant, it's not free money. They look at it with a business lens. And that is one of the hardest points to really communicate to clients. And that you have to really justify why you need $10,000. And $10,000, define reach. Sometimes it isn't always numbers. Sometimes it's behavior change and really following and tracking. And that is a honest conversation that a lot of organizations need to have.
Yeah, I don't know if you're following me around with a t-shirt because you say everything that I believe. I did a webinar. This is exactly what I live for. We'll be right back in a minute. We're going to talk about evidence-based approaches with Monica Ponder on the Footprints of Giving Show.
Today's episode is brought to you by the book, Laddering, Unlocking the Potential of Consumer Behavior by Eric Holtzclaw. Learn the secret to using consumer behavior to unlock the information you have on your consumers and turn it into successful marketing campaigns and product launches. Available online at Amazon.com and in bookstores starting August 2013. For more information, visit www.latteringworks.com.
Have you ever considered hosting your own show?
Do you want to use your expertise to make a difference?
If this sounds like you, come be part of our growth.
We're changing the world, one guest at a time.
For more information on being a host on the Better You Network, contact us at thebetteryouproject@gmail.com.
And we're back on the Footprints of Giving show. We are having a very strong but comical conversation about the realities of working in our industry, especially around nonprofits, financial sustainability, funds development, and fundraising, and the muse that both, and I will not just say our organizations, but even some of our community leaders have around how you actually maintain the vitality of our organization. And that grants aren't free, and you know, you have to have outcomes and outputs, and you have to put in place metrics and to be able to prove your worth and your impact in the community. And Monica and I, we actually just formed a partnership because we're going to get on the road next year. We're doing a tour next year called The End of the Chicken Dinner and Other Fundraising Strategies for Churches. And Monica said, girl, I'm right there with you. Monica, what have you, and I know we've got to get to more about MLP, but if you have a funny story or a real story of having to have that conversation with a client or an organization.
Well, just generally a common theme is maybe the strategy you've used in the last few years may not be the best strategy. And sometimes that's the hardest conversation to have with a nonprofit mm-hmm. or any organization. Mm-hmm. And the rubber chicken dinners are a big one because really they cost to expend. But with social media, a lot of interactivity, there's so many other options, particularly if you are a small firm and you may not have that, or you may not be putting the money in the right things. I think that honest assessment, that business assessment of really how you're making the books and how you're justifying the ROI to make sure that you're continuing to grow and sustain over the long term, it's just a conversation that many do not have.
And you know, I'm jumping in because you have one benefit of being in an industry. And I know you're not tied to the health industry or sector currently, but I expect that organizations that are in the health or science or what I call scientific research industry are more bent towards evidence-based evidence-based approach to solving whatever issues they are, right? Has that been your experience or does it not really matter?
I think you have hit the nail on the head about why I'm so glad I started this path as a scientist. Because their funding requirements to get these federal grants are
right.
So rigorous.
It is.
So rigorous. And to justify millions of dollars to do research. And what you have to demonstrate with those dollars is a very stressful profession because a lot of these universities require that faculty members
to do
pursue these grants
for
their livelihood, even to maintain a job. That's how serious it is. I know many students who their graduate programs had full long courses on how to write federal grants.
Wow.
So that is where it started. And really just in the times that we have with these budget times, mm-hmm. people are very stringent about how they use their funds and how they give them out. Even in the small grants programs that you may see in your community, yes, it may be a seed grant for $5,000, but that is $5,000 that someone has to be accountable for. Mm-hmm. And so the age of free money and even rubber chicken dinners, is that really what your stakeholders need? And then is the dinner, are you inviting the right people to the dinner? There's one organization I work with, and they're so bent on getting to the public and Facebook likes and all of this, but your stakeholders are really policymakers, a very, very, very segmented group. And so a rubber chicken dinner may not be the right strategy for you.
Right.
And so I think it's just a very, you have to just really take a moment to really look at what your goals are and what you're trying to achieve. So that's why I'm so glad I started as a scientist, because, I mean, that's how I was trained and that's mm-hmm. the lens that I bring on. But you start there to really get to the impact and get to the stories in the end. But you have to get the dollars first and justify it.
Right.
And make sure that they fund you again the second year.
Exactly.
So it's a very important conversation.
Yes. It is. And I wish we could, well, we are putting it on tape. Because what I found, Monica, and this is not my interview, it's yours, but we share the sentiment that helping organizations and individuals to value data, to value the collection of the data. And sometimes it's intrinsic, right? My partner, we talk a lot about outcomes versus outputs. But what outcomes and outputs mean to the funding community is a return on investment for every dollar. And if any of you and my nonprofit organizations have been able to suffer through the last 5 years, you've seen state funding dry up. You've seen some federal dollars cut their continuation periods from 1 to 5. We've seen HUD literally do a 35% across the board cut for homeless supportive services. So the point that we're making, and Monica, I want you to help us frame, you know, what success should look like here in a moment. But what we're leading to is, We've got to do a better job of communicating our impact, both internally and externally as organizations, or we're going to lose our place in line for funding, because there are organizations doing a good job of that. And we say, oh, the same people get funding because they're doing a good job of reporting their impact. Now, Monica, just given the scope of your your exposure to the nonprofits working in on the ground, what would you say if you could build an ideal nonprofit organization, what would success look like for a nonprofit organization in the community?
Okay, so I think this is going to be the second class on that tour. So, because I think it's helping to translate the value of data, both for funders and nonprofits. So I've been on both sides, mm-hmm. and I review grant applications. And a lot of times, even funders, they look at the number of outcomes. Oh, they're only reaching X amount of people. Well, but are they having a behavior change, which is much harder to do with dollars. So it becomes really defining what impact is and what reach is. And so that's why it has to be a very unique conversation for every nonprofit. You want to help youth, but is your goal to get these youth enrolled in college, to actually change their awareness, their knowledge, their attitudes, their beliefs, and actually prove that percentage change? And so you're building in your evaluation as you go, and you put that into the document. So maybe you having a health fair, and this is just one of my personal opinions. I'm in healthcare, I'm in public health, I'm an advocate, but even health fairs, they're not strong intervention models, because you touch people one time with information, more than likely there's not a follow-up there. So even proposing that to a funder, they will look at that with that lens. So that's why you need experts at the table as you're developing your plan, your funding strategy, to really talk about, and then what is the take home? Maybe it's not the health fair, but you put that money into buying 100 self-measured blood pressure monitors and give them out in a church and make sure that everyone in the church is committed every week to record their blood pressure online. Maybe it's actually going to Omron and asking for 10 free pedometers and giving them out into your target community to make sure they can track it online. Now you have great numbers for your intervention that approve not just reach, but changes in awareness, knowledge, attitude, behaviors, sustainability, commitment. That is what people are looking for, because guess what? The next question is, how can we fund you again to replicate it,
yep.
to document it, to share it, to expand, yep. and to make it broader? That is how you grow an organization. So I think that is class number two on this
yes.
tour.
Yes.
Because it's a very important yes. conversation, but that is exactly what we do. And then once you actually have the success, what is your campaign? What is your message? That's when you get PR.
Yep. Yep.
So
you have something
the story.
To talk about. Yeah, yes. that's mm-hmm. that's the story. And I think that's the burden. That's right. That's mm-hmm. the goal for us. Now, what will success look like for MLP moving forward? I know you've
yeah.
You've done some formidable work, but what will success look like for you guys over the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, my goal is to connect celebrity advocates, funders with nonprofits, governmental organizations, and corporations who are trying to do social good, social and health and community good. So what I would like to do is get it to a point where our business model is the Angel Network model, to where if you have a need, you have a great intervention, you come to us. And we make sure that we provide that service for your organization at no cost to you, but we connect you with the funder to make sure that what you can do could be replicated, done with the right model and right mindset. And I think this could be applied to a host of health issues. I think the international community with PEPFAR and CARE have done tremendous things with this type of business model, bringing people together to make sure you solve community problems. So I'd like to do that, but domestically.
I love that. I'm trying not to be as excited as I really am. We'll be right back with Monica Ponder from MLP on the Footprints of Giving show, and I'm going to work on calming down in the interim. We'll be right back.
Susan McMullen is a professional speaker, small business coach, writer, and co-founder of the radio station, The Better You Network. Her 26-year career in direct patient care while raising 3 kids and serving as her parents' caregiver instilled in her a passion for caring for others. It also gave her a unique perspective on what it takes to make a career change later in life. She uses her experience to coach others off the cliff into the life they really want, but can now only imagine. Contact Susan by sending an email to thebetteryouproject@gmail.com. Again, contact Susan by sending an email to thebetteryouproject@gmail.com. You can also listen to Susan's journey by visiting our archives at thebetteryounetwork.com.
And we're back with Monica. And Monica, I don't want her to leave the studio without giving us some golden nuggets of advice for organizations that may be listening and have not even either made a financial priority or have had the financial wherewithal to hire a firm like yours. First of all, I want to say that Monica will be happy to entertain any organizations who are thinking about undertaking a funding opportunity or laying out a communications plan or strategy, or even people now, the buzzword is, I need a social media content strategy. Whatever that is, I think you should reach out to Monica first to understand what the value of your message is. But in that, Monica, can you help us to get some clarity? What would be the one thing that you would want every organization or leader, even if it's a funder, to understand? Just leave us with one thing. If you could get one thing right about communications, whether you're healthy or not, what would that thing be? What would you guide us to?
I would encourage every organization that is out doing any type of social good, not just health, but civic, social, community good, mm-hmm. to actually take a moment to understand what their unique story is and what do they do intrinsically well, and really evaluate from that point, do you have the resources, personnel, factors in place to make sure that you are having the best impact in that unique service. So to look at where you want to be first and what you do very uniquely, and then to backtrack and build your organization that way. So it's not trimming the fat, but it's making sure that you're aligned and doing the right things. So you mentioned that a lot of organizations want a social media strategy. What if the people who really can make the difference for you are not on social media? What if it is just one channel that may not be the most popular social media channel that's out there that you need to leverage? Maybe you are the key candidate for Google+. People like to interact with you. They like to connect with you. Maybe that is your channel. I say make sure that you know exactly what you do uniquely. It's not always about buzz or getting tens of thousands of followers or reach. Sometimes that is in it, and that is okay. The key is telling the story about the good work that you do in the right format. And so I think it's about not believing the hype and not comparing yourself to other organizations, and then also making sure that you're using dollars in the way, in the best way. There's now a lot of overhead, but that it really is about a service provision and really about doing things in the right way, at least up front. I think the glory days will come, but I think you at least have to get to the point where you have a solid strategy, solid investment, solid ROI that you can demonstrate, great stories, and then the rest is just, you know, yours to really for the taking.
Go do it. Yeah, that's the go do it part. That's the easy part, right?
I think so.
Let me go do this. Now, Monica, how can listeners remain connected with you? What's the best way? You said you had a minute. You mentioned a blog that you have, mm-hmm. and uh, are, I'm absolutely sure you're on social media. So tell us how to contact you.
Okay. The best way is always through my website. It's mlpcommunications.com.
Okay. That's M as in Mary, L as in Larry, P as in Polly, communications.com.
Communications with an S.
Yes.
And we are actually relaunching our website in the near future. So I encourage you to follow us and stay connected. I would love to stay connected and really hear more about the stories and the great work that is going on in the community. So that gives me personal pleasure. So you won't really overrun me if you do connect with me. My email address is mlp@mlpcommunications.com. And my blog is actually a health blog, and it's a blog in jest, and we talk about a lot of cultural things from a health, social, and civic aspect. But the name of the blog is Free, F-R-E-E, Condoms, CONDOMS, and lollipops.com.
I don't know how we got away. How we didn't get to that today.
It's a health media website, and we actually talk about all things culture on that website. But we make sure that it's something that even, you know, my mother would understand and get her to care about health in a way that really is not easily understood in maybe the news media. So we just try to translate it in a very community-friendly way.
Yeah, we skirted that one, bud. I'm telling you, we would have only because I think that's an eye-opening blog that would bring some attention to some much needed topics. Monica, thank you so much. We didn't have enough time. Of course, we'll do this again. Thank you for joining us on the Footprints of Giving show. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. I want to scream and shout and let it all out and
scream and shout and let it. Today's episode is brought to you by the DeUnity Group of Atlanta, your ultimate business resource solution in competing for government-based contracts and grants. For more information, send all inquiries to info@deunitygroup.com. Once again, for more information, send all inquiries to info@deunitygroup.com.